Now, this is the last meeting until the day after Valentine's Day. So if all the women want to kiss me, they have to they have to do it tonight or not at all. The other classes, the Thursday classes, will start a week later because I have to be on my feet in developing for them. But this one will start the day after Valentine's Day. With Aries, we have an assertion. But after that kind of assertion, you need some steadiness, and that steadiness comes from Taurus. But with the grave, heavy nature of Taurus, you need some wit, and that comes from Gemini. And after that dry, sparkling wittiness, you need something more emotional than that. And so you get feeling from Cancer. But then sometimes after you feel things, you begin to take pride in them. And that comes with Leo. Then you need to think about other people rather than yourself alone. And so there is a correction that is made to consideration and human engineering and that sort of thing, which comes with Virgo. But Virgo's world is very orderly, but it isn't necessarily pretty. And so what you need after that is beauty. And beauty comes with Libra. Now, the kind of beauty that is Libra is often very delicate. It's very balanced and it's very refined. And if one continues in that direction, one becomes effete. And so what you need is passion. And so Scorpio comes along with passion. However, the kind of Scorpio that, the kind of passion that Scorpio has is sometimes negative. It can tell you what's wrong about the whole world. It can become pretty sour. It's like the sauerkraut of the zodiac. So you need something to change direction again. What you need is optimism. And Sagittarius represents optimism. It is seeing things with a very positive, very happy attitude. Now, Virgo thinks in terms of improvement. Libra thinks in terms of refinement. Scorpio thinks in terms of destruction. Sagittarius doesn't think in any of those terms. It gets above it all. Sagittarius thinks in terms of transcendence. If there are problems, just rise above the problems. Maybe you'll solve them, maybe you won't, but at least you'll feel good in a buoyant, transcendent place of consciousness. Virgo represents organization. Libra represents beautification. Scorpio represents trial. Sagittarius, they're captured on tape forever. Sagittarius represents positivity. Enough with the trials. Let's just have a good time. What good is life if you're not enjoying yourself? That's the Sagittarius outlook. They don't want to be blue. They want to be happy. Virgo in the body represents assimilation. In the intestines, we assimilate very discreetly. Libra represents filtration. Scorpio represents general elimination. But we're in the last third of the zodiac now, and in the last third of the zodiac, things are much more purposeful. And the body doesn't just live for itself. It does something, and that doing something in the body is called metabolism. A lot of the metabolism takes place in the liver, which is said to be ruled by Jupiter. If one of the downflaws of Virgo is criticism, one of the downflaws of Libra is overly finishing things or refining them. And Scorpio is reworking and reworking and reworking. But Sagittarius is never content. It's always aspiring. I have to aspire to something new. It's not just ambition. That's another sign. Aspiration is much more spiritual than that, much more philosophical. Virgo represents maintenance. Libra represents response or responsiveness. Scorpio represents dissidence. Sagittarius represents approval. The whole word avuncular or avuncular support is a wonderful Sagittarian word. It's amazing if you approve of someone, because most of us, you know, we're very serious about life. We're trying to do something, and we're not really sure that we're succeeding. And if we get one word of approval, we can really blossom. And that's really the quality that Sagittarius has. Virgo likes purity. Libra likes design. Scorpio likes intensity. What Sagittarius likes is a very abstract thing. Goodness. And every Sagittarius is absolutely sure that they know what is good. I'm just doing this because it's a good thing to do. Aries is pioneering in the society. Taurus is settlement. Gemini is practicality. Cancer is tribalization. Leo is population, children. Virgo is labor. Libra is legalism. Scorpio is mutual finances and how you deal with death. But when you start dealing with death, you develop a philosophical response. So all things that are religious or philosophical, or where there is a, what's the right word? Resurrection. Rising above things is a Sagittarian quality. Virgo likes method. Libra likes accommodation. Scorpio loves reaction. Sagittarius likes affirmations. You have to be a shallow as a Sagittarian to go for affirmations. Sometimes they're necessary and they work. I have a friend who had, from time to time in his life, has been a New Age author. And he's authored and published several books. And he published one on affirmations. And the guy, he calls me up about once or twice a year, and he shudders when he's punching in the number, because he knows that he's going to get it working over. And he has this book of affirmations, and for impotence, his affirmation is, "What goes down must go up." The sixth house in Virgo, repair. The seventh house and Libra, socialize. The eighth house, especially, but Scorpio also represents loss. But Sagittarius represents edification. It's a beautiful, beautiful word. It means an upliftment of someone. When somebody's edified, brought to a higher level. Lovely word. This is a sign that's really difficult. I'm going to have to strain really hard to say hard things about Sagittarius. That's the problem with Sagittarius, is it can get away with anything and everything. It's such an amiable sign. It's so affable that you just love them. And you know, you can't say anything bad about him. You know, who can say anything bad about somebody that everybody wants to be around because they're cheery and happy and things like that? But being a Scorpio, I'll do my best. Yes, all the common signs are superficial. That's where they're, yes, that's what their work in the world is. They do the superficial things, which are absolutely necessary things. You got to have people who write the newspapers. You don't want somebody like me to write a newspaper. It would take you 15 minutes to read the first paragraph. It would be turgid and sticky and filled with innuendo and everything else. He wants somebody that can sort of say the facts, like a Gemini writing the newspaper. That brings us to Gemini. We're looking at complementation through opposition. When we looked at Gemini, we said that Gemini liked facts and data. The opposite side, Sagittarius, can't stand that. Don't bother me with the facts. Give me the theory. Give me the idea. Give me the principle. If I have that, that's sufficient. The third house represents opportunities to think concretely. The ninth house represents opportunities to think abstractly. So we have a very marked complementation between the concrete and the abstract with Gemini and Sagittarius. As we said, Gemini could take any side of an argument because it had that ability to be expedient. Well, Sagittarius never wants to be expedient. It'll be wasteful before it will be expedient. It will it'll be careless before it'll be expedient, but by preference, it would rather be idealistic. Sagittarius is the sign of the idealists, even philosophical idealists. Gemini is polarized. It's in a world where it's yes or no. Jupiter, or Sagittarius, is universalized. It's all-inclusive. It has that bigness about it that it can take everything. Yeah, there may be dualities within, but what counts is the universal oneness. And there's a kind of a negative complementation. One of the purposes of Gemini is enervation. If you see a chipmunk or a squirrel, they're enervated all the time. They're twitching, twitching. But you can't go on that way all the time because with constant... You'd even have nervous fatigue, to say nothing of muscular fatigue and emotional fatigue and everything else. So what one of the things that Sagittarius does to complement Gemini is to relax. This is a comfortable sign. This is a very relaxing, comfortable sign. If we look at the picture or the image, it is an arrow that is projecting to the stars. But still, there's a piece of the bow that is there. It's not just the Sagitta itself. So there is still some kind of connection to Earth. This is a sign that, given the chance, would like to float away like a helium balloon. And it would really like that, because the more it floated away, the bigger it would get. It would expand until bursting. And it wouldn't even feel bad about that. It's so positive, because if it burst, then its helium would be throughout the universe, and it wouldn't be just limited to one thing. That's sort of the way Sagittarius thinks. Bigger and bigger and better in life. Pollyanna is a certain Sagittarius, and there is something very, very wonderful about Pollyanna thinking. Unfortunately, those sophisticated, urbane types of people don't like Pollyanna thinking, because, you know, the smart people are pessimistic and dour and all of those qualities. So the arrow represents a projection, an aspiration, and it wants something open-ended. Sagittarius is probably one of the most open-ended sign of the zodiac. The sky's the limit, so there is no limit. So, but we're still dealing with humans here. And what happens is a thing and its opposite comes in. There is this tremendous open-mindedness and this big spiritedness, but there's a necessity to be attached to the earth, so there is a lot of orthodoxy. In fact, some people can't even take much of the Sagittarius quality without a whole bunch of orthodoxy to contain it, because it's too much for most people. That's what religion is. People go through these forms and rites and things like that, and in the forms and rites they get a picture of something better, or they get a feeling of something better. The Sagittarius would have pure something better if it could. So it is a projection of light toward the light. So this is a sign that believes in enlightenment. It believes in education, not for knowledge, not for accomplishing anything else, but just as something of a purpose in its own. You learn more and more. You know, it's sort of like the traditional scholar who goes to the traditional university with a barrel of crackers and a barrel of cheese or something like that. And when both barrels are empty, he's done. And then he teaches other people who do the same thing. Animals or pictures, the centaur. And the centaur in the pictorial zodiac is aiming his arrow right at the heart of the scorpion. From the scorpion's point of view, the scorpion is stinging at the feet of the horse, but from the Sagittarian's point of view, it's ridding the world of these lowly things that crawl on their belly. It's trying to make a better world. We're dealing with the sign of do-gooders here. We're dealing, the reformers. Not necessarily saying that that's bad, you know, like the hellfire creatures, those are the Scorpios. But these are the ones that say, don't bother with that stuff. Reach for something higher. These are people who convert people. The centaur has a dual nature. It's part horse, part human. And so it's double body. All of the common signs are called double body, with the exception of Virgo. So it's got a bestial nature and an aspiration to a human nature, and sometimes beyond that, even to the stars. Obviously, one of the animals that is ruled by Sagittarius is the horse. And if you want to really get a good feeling for horses, there is a video you must check out. It is a movie that was made of a stage play in England. It is one of the very best movies I've ever seen in my life, and it has Richard Burton in it, and his acting job is stupendous. It's called Equus. It's the story of a boy who hangs out and works at the stables, and he blinds all the horses in the stable with a sickle. And he is very mentally disturbed, and Richard Burton has to solve his personality and bring him back to health. And the interaction between the two of them and all of the, you know, there's, like in any good interaction, each takes with the other, and each takes something from the other, and it is really great. I don't want to spoil it for you, but it's a very fine movie. Horses, as we know, are highly spirited animals. Very spirited. You can see it in their eyes. They're intelligent and proud. And this is one of those signs that probably, because of the double-bodied nature of the centaur, is double in its character. Sagittarius can be a pretty wild sign, but at the same time, it is tameable. Horses live well wild, or just as well in human society. And horses love their oats. Each of the elements is for one of the primary grains that we use, at least in the Western world. Wheat is for the earthy signs. Rye is for the watery signs. Barley is for the airy signs. And fiery signs have oats. When we say someone is feeling their oats, it means that they're just ready to go. Horses need to have wide open spaces, and they need to have things clear. They don't have to have things lush. Now that describes a character really well. Everything has to be open. It doesn't like enclosed places. And when you say that things have to be clear, it doesn't like detailed things or murky things or things like that. But they're willing to deal with sparse things. You know, things don't have to be plush for them. They can do very well on their own. You can see this because they are prey, and they have to be able to get away, so things have to be clear for them. It's one of the few of the positive signs that is outright prey. Most of the negative signs are prey, and the predators are the positive signs. Horses, as we know, are capable of civilization. They can learn language, and in rare cases, they can even learn very simple arithmetic, counting, adding, and subtracting. And horses and humans have a very special rapport. There is an excellent book, I'm out of it here, and it'll probably be next spring before I get copies of it in. It's called Kinship with All Life. It's by a Hollywood screenwriter named, his last name is Boone. I think it's Richard Allen Boone or something like that. And this is a man that was to babysit the famous dog Strongheart. And part of his part of his chores with the dog, every day he was supposed to read fine literature to the dog. And the dog would lay there and he would read fine literature. But in the interactions with the dog, he found out that the dog completely telepathic, that he could be in one part of the house and the dog could be in another part of the house, and he'd think one thought, it's time to go for a walk. And with that one thought, the dog would be there with the leash. And it was, you know, that kind of, and this took him on a big tour all over the world, seeing people who have rapports with animals. He developed a pet fly, and the fly would come and land on the tip of his finger. And he had an understanding with the fly that the fly could not land on his face. And one of the things he found was that in all civilizations, whether it was Arabs or Native Americans or people who do dressage, there is a special relationship between horse and human, that they become as one, and they really become like a centaur. And that, you know, it's quite something for a horse to let something of our weight sit on it. And, you know, there's that kind of a special, there's a human quality about horses. And this is where I believe all of that high-mindedness and all of that aspiration and such like that is associated with Sagittarius. Horses have an enormous range of any non-artificial form of transportation. So horses get you around. And if you take a long trip, your mind gets opened. You see things from a much broader perspective. And so the horse has always represented to people a kind of freedom through which they could open their mind, like soul trips or things like that. Horses are extremely mobile. They have bursts of running. They don't have high stamina, and they don't have a lot of endurance. And you know that a baby colt can walk and run within hours of the time that it is born? Yes. I've been on horses maybe two or three times in my life. And once in my early 20s, I was on the horseback for the first time since childhood. And we took a horse trip in Glacier National Park, and all day on the horse. And that horse could walk more steadily on glacial scree than I could. They were that sure-footed. The thing was, we were just groaning by the end of the day. And you got about a half a mile from the paddock, and those horses just took off on a run, and you hung on for dear life because they wanted the food and everything else. And by that time, you were so sore that it was like the final blow of punishment. They're sensitive. Horses are extremely sensitive. But they're not as bold and daring in a physical way as the Leo or Aries. Horses are such that they have a lot of blood per pound weight. If you want to, I like books where there's a storyline and at the same time, there is a lot of information. There's a book by Jane Smiley called Horse Heaven. And I think she says that a horse can lose something like 7 or 8 gallons of blood without even noticing it. And it's, a horse can easily bleed to death. And we all know that horses are extremely, extremely proud, which is a characteristic of Sagittarius. Zebras. Other horse-like things, such as gnus, are ruled by Sagittarius. Now, this is a sign that even though it's positive and cheery and such like that, it's spunky. And if you've ever seen a zebra, or especially a gnu, it's really, really a spunky kind of animal. Another Sagittarian animal, giraffes. Elevation. Elevation is a good word for Sagittarius. You're high. You're looking from way up. You're migratory. They're another animal that has to be on the move all the time. And there's another animal. Taxonomically, it would be closer to the pigs and closer to the Taurus, because it has some of those qualities. Astrologically, it is much more associated with Sagittarius, and that is the elephant. They're huge. They're great. They do things in a grand style. And if an elephant is part of a parade or a religious celebration and it's got all of the silks on it and the howdah and all of that, that elephant knows it's part of something, and it carries itself with something like a priest or a bishop or something like that. It's really quite something. But then, especially the African variety of elephants can be very roguish, very indulgent. Indian elephants are sometimes tainted by humans. Do you know that there are alcoholic elephants? That you can get an elephant alcoholic so that it becomes very mean and uncontainable if it doesn't get its hooch. They're hairless, which indicates, like all of the fiery signs have those big domed foreheads and tend toward early baldingness. And hairlessness indicates very often a relationship toward the environment that you don't need protection. If you're that big, you don't need protection at all. Who's going to attack you? Even a lion gets out of the way when the elephant comes to the water hole. The brain of an elephant is convoluted in a manner that is very similar to the convolution in humans. And therefore, they understand human consciousness. And it isn't just that they intuitively sense or that they instinctually sense what's going on. They can understand. Do you know that they communicate through their feet? They go up and down like that with their feet. You know that elephant cannot stay on its feet standing without moving or going up and down more than just a few seconds. It has to constantly be moving the feet. But they know how to cause the ground to rumble, and other elephants several miles away can feel from the ground up what they, you know, it's quite something. Elephants are fascinating. I've had two friends in life that were elephant freaks. I don't know how to say it any other way. They're both women. Their houses were filled with big, small, wood, stuffed elephants, little brass elephants. I had one friend that must easily have had 200 or 300 elephants in her house. And then she moved to a house trailer. There's something that you can become fascinated with, things like that. They're associated with pageantry, with religion, and with nobility. We're talking about aristocrats here. You know, a sagittarius, not in a snobbish way, but in a genuine way, the Sagittarius believes the cream rises to the top. And they believe they're the cream. Because they eat enough of it. This is the butter-loving sign. Love them fats. They care for their own within their own society. They almost have like their own welfare among elephants. And there's another family is a very strange family. Ostriches, emus, and rheas. They too are elevated, and they too are long distance runners. And they too got that feisty, plucky kind of quality. They're playful, but you don't mess with them, man. They can do you in. And thing of putting your stick your head in the sand comes up. You know, they say that if there's danger, that the ostrich sticks its head in the sand. I think that actually comes from the fact that they're probably listening. They have an ear to the ground and are not sticking their head in the sand. But Sagittariuses do stick their head in the sand. They do it in a most unusual way. They become like ostriches. If this is the body of the ostrich with two legs and sticks his head in, that's the same thing as having a tetrahedron. And the tetrahedron is the symbol of the human in abstract. If you follow in various different spiritual studies, the original patriarch, whether it is a Swayambhuv or a Noah, the original patriarch is always associated with that kind of lofty first place kind of thing. I am going into something that's very deep and entailed. I probably shouldn't have even started it. But when you're talking about primals, transcendental primals from which all things come, when you say a human, or when you use the old parlance, when you say man, in abstract, that is the self, that does the thinking, the spirit, the focus of the spirit that works through the mind and through the emotions and through actions and through the physical body, that is always symbolized by the tetrahedron. So the Sagittarians bury their head in the sand by burying their head in the clouds, actually, is the way it comes about. All right, most of the stagged animals are Sagittarian. Deer, elk, caribou. I don't know about moose. I don't have enough of an understanding of the habits of moose. Again, they are a fiery sign that is prey. And for that reason, they're all sensitive and nimble and fast. But because they live in a habitat that is not open, they have to be even more sensitive than the horse. Some people even claim that there is an attunement to the desire world, which some call the astral world, through the antlers, that they function as a sensitivity device, but not in a sensate way, like the whiskers of a cat. And the deer and the elk are different from most other horny mammals. The word horniness comes from the fact that most horned animals have large-sized scrota. Just go to the state fair sometime in Milwaukee and look at all of the sheep and the goats and all of the things that they have large horns. They have large scrota. But this doesn't happen with the stags. This is what I'm trying to get at here. Tough. A cosmic sensitivity to something higher is represented by the rack. And that rack is something that they're proud of. It's not just something that they fight with when they fight, and it's not just something that they use to measure distances by. If you see a deer strutting, he's proud of that. And that kind of elegant thing that is an animal, but not quite so animal as to have the large scrotum, is an attitude that is very Sagittarius-like. Now, this is a difficult sign to get in touch with because it is so abstract, and because the things that, at least for me, it's hard always to get near them. Deer are rarely aggressive. Even horses are more aggressive. And there's a special kind of deer that some people claim is a goat, and that is the unicorn. Not a rhinoceros. Rhinoceros means horn on the nose, but that because that's ruled by Taurus. And it's not as the biologists think of it, which is that goat, which is sometimes one horn that is in Southeast Asia, like in the Vietnamese jungle. But we're talking here about the mythical unicorn. The mythical unicorn is a rare thing. There is such a thing. We have a prayer meeting that meets here every Sunday night. And in that prayer meeting, we do a lot of healing prayer. And we try to reach very deep into the spiritual worlds by using our feelings as intensely as we can use them. Because it is the feeling, especially the feeling for someone who is suffering, and the wanting to do something to help is what drives the spirit. And what happens in the aura, when one is very much attuned to the divine with that kind of feeling, it forms a projection that goes miles into space. Some people have the experience of being way up in space and then seeing the world down below them. And if you're in that deep of a level, you can bring down pure spiritual energy that can heal someone psychologically and physically. That kind of aspiration that is indicated by the horn of the unicorn is what Sagittarius represents, because it's generous. That unicorn's horn in that spiral is the same thing as the horn of plenty that we see at Thanksgiving. It's called some people call it a cornucopia, but it's really a amalthea comes from a Greek word called amalthea, who is the goat that nurtured Zeus when he was a baby. When the sun is in Sagittarius, it's now. The sun is sinking lower and lower and lower to the horizon, the southern horizon. And the physical light is the most oblique and the most ineffectual. But the spiritual light, which comes from within, is very strong. It's just like our aspiration spiritually isn't as strong when we're healthy and having a good time. But if we become ill, or if we start having blues and woes and things like that, we suddenly become very spiritual. And the same thing happens with the world. The prevalent attitude of the drawing on the source of goodwill is generosity, cheer, optimism, faith. People call it a Christmas spirit. At this time, people who live by the land sense their inadequacy. They're thankful for what they have, and they realize they need something more. And if they approach with a thankful attitude in their appeals, more is given to them. So there is an anticipation. There's a faith that the light is going to come back. And that those all represent Sagittarian types of qualities. Now, Sagittarius is one of the signs that likes telling stories. And I have all kinds of Sagittarian stories. I don't know, the notes are so thick, I don't know if I even want to tangle with them. How are we doing on time here? Ooh, not too good, are we? Centaurs. The centaurs, as we just said a few minutes ago, are double-bodied animals. But everything about the centaurs is doubled. There are two centaurs in the heavens. One is Sagittarius, and one is Centaurus in the southern hemisphere. There are two families of centaurs. There's Chiron or Chiron, and all the rest. And in the double-bodiedness, there are two sides. There is an indulgent, a bestial side, a roguish side that likes to have fun. But it's horseplay. It's horsing around. Or, as the Seren Sagittarius would like to see, a la Rocky, performing like a stallion. The other side is human. It represents the awareness of divine spirituality, the universal that is focused in our animal nature. They even have two completely different origins. There's the story of Ixion, which is a long story. He was sort of a nasty guy. In fact, I think he fed part of his children to the gods. For, as a consequence, he was put to a cross over a bed of coals for eternity. And he had something to do. Let's see. Oh, yes. He was an outcast who had a bestial taste for horses. The Magnesian horses from Magnesia, and from his fooling around is where the centaurs were born. The other one was Cronos was fooling around one time, and Rhea was about to catch him, and what he did is quickly changed her into a horse, but at just the wrong moment, and Chiron was the result of that union. They have different characters. All the rest of the centaurs are gate crashers, and they get drunk even at the smell of wine. That's what metabolism does for you. They're uncontrollable, they're careless, and they're never satisfied. They get into all kinds of trouble. Then there's Chiron. Chiron is a teacher with a capital T. He's the teacher of Heracles, Jason, Achilles, Pelas, many others. He teaches everything. He teaches horsemanship. He teaches herbal remedies. He wasn't a healer himself, but he did teach other healers. The misunderstanding comes in that his first student was Aesculapius, a very famed healer. Positivity and humor and a good, cheery attitude does more healing than anything else. If you believe you can be healed, and if you can look at something positively, it changes the whole nature, the whole tenor of your body. Heracles had all kinds of fights with the centaurs, and all there are all kinds of stories here that I think I don't want to go into. It's more than is appropriate, I think. Other myths of Sagittarius: the myth of Pegasus or of grain. Pegasus is the flying horse. And the heroes get to ride. It was Bellerophon who rode Pegasus. This means one is soul flight. One is liberated from the limits of the physical and can fly through the air. Your abstract consciousness can do that even without complete spiritual awareness. It was a star body. It was transphysical transport. Grain was the horse of Wotan. It was an eight-legged horse. It had four legs on the top and four legs on the bottom, so that when the bottom legs got tired, he just tipped the horse over. And it was tireless. But it also shows the relationship between the concrete and the abstract. You can look at things from the bottom up or from the top down. But when you look from the top down, you can imagine what it looks like from the bottom up, which you can't do with the Gemini kind of consciousness. And then there's a whole special kind of mythology that is for Sagittarius. You might even say with Pisces, too. It's called hagiography. It is the fictionalized histories of saints. And it's really interesting because those histories are very formularized. If you've read one, you've read them all. And that's all right, because that's the way it works. Because there is, in abstract, what is an abstract idea? How do we express it? We express it in a formula. We bring it to life by living that formula out, but there are only so many principles in us. We're all part of the same evolutionary creation. We've all got the same stuff in us. Therefore, the steps or the rungs on Jacob's ladder, the ladder of apotheosis, are the same for everyone. We may have our own unique little points of view according to the deviations that we've done, but when it comes right down to it, we all have the same pattern. Joseph, Jacob's son Joseph. Joseph is a fruitful bough on the wall whose boughs run over the wall. Archers have grieved him and hated him and shot at him, but he has been made strong by a mighty God. That's Jacob in Genesis, and in Deuteronomy he says, his glory is like the firstling of his bullock, and his horns are like the horns of unicorns. Cosmologically speaking, Sagittarius represents transcendence to universals. That transcendence can come in various ways. come in something as thin but demanding as mathematics, or as thick but as obscure as myths and stories. But it is something that transports one to a realm of universals. And even though all of those universals are creative, the creative part isn't that interesting to the Sagittarian kind of consciousness. It just takes joy. It takes happiness in reveling in the idea that something is good, that there is a right, that God is in its heaven and all is well. The idea that there is a divine conception. Meister Eckhart said it, I see God with the same eye that God sees me. Meaning to say that connection, that formula, that focus of the universal, that is what a human is the same focus, whether you look from the phenomenal to the transcendent or from the transcendent to the phenomenal. Transcendence is a rising above things. It is a looking for something rare. And if there isn't anything rare, it'll get bored. And in its boredom, it'll debauch and do things like that. This is a kind of consciousness that you can't walk into heaven. You have to be edified. You have to be, I'm not focusing on words right tonight. That's what happens when you focus on ideas instead of words. You have to be elevated. You have to be raised up. And those are all qualities of Sagittarius. But the way you do it is you lift yourself by your own bootstraps. That is, have any of you read the Divine Comedy by Dante? When Dante rises to a different heavenly world, he either looks at the face of Beatrice and eventually he has something else, but every time he looks at something, he's raised up. See, the whole idea of, now this, I'm going to say something about an idea, and I don't want to be confused with a deity, especially a deity that people take personally. The whole idea of transcendence and upliftment is you look to something beyond yourself. And by looking to that something beyond yourself, you are raised up. But eventually the whole concept collapses on itself, and this is very Sagittarian. If whatever it raises us up by looking up to it is God, God is God to God. That is, the spirit looks within itself and finds something beyond itself, within itself, and it is perpetually self-raising. And whatever falls off and drops down is what we live in. I don't know how to say it. It's we're living in the leavings. It's a creative kind of leavings, but that's what it is. So we're talking about a principle of analogy here. The most famous principle of analogy is called the Hermetic Axiom. As above, so below, what has gone before in heaven will follow after on earth. Know this and rejoice. And Sagittarius certainly wants to rejoice. So if you get the idea, if you get the analogy, like a child in sixth grade gets the analogy that an atom is shaped like a solar system and a solar system is shaped like a galaxy, and that there is an analogous principle for manifestation in the simplest way in space as the form that is saucer-like. Now that doesn't all happen to a child in grade school, but the whole idea of the analogy does. They get that idea that it's there. Whole idea of proportional triangles, or the sense, not perspective, but proportion belongs to Sagittarius. We haven't come to perspective yet, but proportion, or what is important. You know, if you walk out under the stars, and even with a minimal knowledge of astronomy, and you realize how far they are and how eternal it all is, the little things of your personal life that you've been fretting over, they come as to be as naught. And that is what the consciousness of Sagittarius is about. It isn't just a shallow Pollyanna stuff. There is something to it. If you're happy and positive, you do put things in proportion. And when you see things in proportion, you solve things in a much bigger way. Now, one of the things that comes out of proportion thinking is teleology. Teleology is a believing, well, that since ants have a queen and bees have a queen, the cosmos must have a center. It's that kind of analogical thinking. However, sometimes, being humans, the Sagittarians get lost and stuck on the example and not necessarily on the principle. That's a difficult one for Sagittarians. Purpose. Sagittarius and the ninth house especially is the opportunities to understand or to have purpose in life. Everything else you can, you know, a lot of things you can weigh or measure or things like that, but purpose is open-ended. So if you're dealing with something and the planet that you're trying to work with is in Sagittarius or in the ninth house or both, you can help that person get out of their difficulties by getting a sense of purpose. And with that comes enthusiasm. Encouragement. Now, if you start thinking about higher things like this with a sense of proportion, you develop at each level of proportion, you develop a value system. The ninth house especially relates to value systems. What is good? What is better? What is the highest to aspire to? So this is the sign that wants values. Now, it doesn't want moral judgments. It wants the values. It wants the principles. It wants the purpose. The ninth house is often associated with judges. And these are judges that are to the spirit of the law, not to the letter of the law. Wants something on a higher level. All ideas. The process of ideation, of forming an idea, of abstracting, is a Sagittarian quality. You realize that when you start living a life of ideas, there's an ever receding horizon. It's like aspiration. You aspire to get better. And when you get better, you can see there's ever so much further to go until eventually you get the whole spirit of that, and then you have that Sagittarian quality of we're living in this constant aspiration. Everything's getting better kind of quality. Now, ideas are not generalizations. It's a very big difference. Some generalizations are ideas. But ideas are much more precise. Sharaji can tell you all about ideas because he works with precise ideas all along. If you don't get it right, you know, nothing works out. It doesn't figure. You can't figure things out. You don't come to a conclusion. So the whole idea of getting the idea and that the idea is provable. It is provable within its own system, whether it is something like a tautological axiomatic system such as mathematics is, or whether it is an idea that relates to the evolution of a society. It's something that you can prove to yourself. Now, there's things that happen when you start thinking in this broad ideational consciousness. In the idea, it's so easy to do. But in the material reality, it isn't so easy to do. And Sagittarians sometimes have a great deal of vagueness, or they have a great deal of over-optimism, because they got the idea and the idea is right, but it hasn't been carried out. And sometimes it's really much easier to just live in the idea and not carry it out. Everything's going to be fine anyway. That's the Sagittarian kind of laziness. A very different rationale for laziness than the laziness that we saw with Leo. This is obviously a sign of enlightenment. Not intellectual alone, not purely spiritual, but somewhere in between. It is scholarship to lead to light. It is philosophy and theology to come to truth, or something of that nature. And you know when you struck pay dirt, because it means happiness for everyone. Only Sagittarius, I don't think in terms of dirt of any kind. Now, the reason this sign is so hard to deal with, there are not so many things you can point to. We said in an earlier talk that introversion, when something is introverted, it stagnates and it becomes very complicated. You don't ever expect Aries to be really complicated, and even more so, you don't expect Sagittarius to be complicated, because it's so extroversive. Things are always flowing out. There are no complications, and there's nothing to point a finger at. It's not a very ostensive sign at all that you can do that. So there is something about Sagittarius that is simple. I don't mean simple in the sense of stupidity or something like that, but there's the notion to the Sagittarius consciousness, and there is truth to it. Even Einstein says it. The more simple something is, the more likely it is to be true. Einstein said it with a qualifier. He said that, state it as simply as you can, but no more simple. Because if you say it more simple, you have it isn't the truth anymore. So this is a very difficult sign to elucidate. Now, if a person is focused in simplicity and has their notion of what simplicity is, it's very hard to point them to facts. You see what I mean? It's not stubborn, like I've got the truth, but it's focused on this simplicity, and it just, you know, it's like trying to grab a wet bar of soap. You can't do it. It's very hard to pin somebody like this down. So there's optimism in this. Have I told you the story of the difference between an optimist and a pessimist? I think I have. That they tried to prove whether there was an optimist or a pessimist, the psychologists, and they searched all over, and they found two little boys, one of whom was an optimist and one of whom was a pessimist. You've heard the story. But they tried to prove it out. And they put the pessimist boy in a room, huge room, all filled with toys and baubles of all kind. And they came back several hours later, and the little kid was crying. They said, "Why are you crying?" And he said, "You know, there were all these toys you could play with." He said, "I couldn't play with them. I might break one." The other little boy, they put in a room, big room, that's filled with horse manure. Nothing but horse manure. And they come back several hours later and they look, and there's holes in the horse manure all over the place, and they can't see the little boy. And they call for him, and all of a sudden his head pops out of one of the holes, and they say, "What are you doing?" And he says, I figure with all this horse dookie here, there must be a pony somewhere. So we're talking about a sign here that it feels good to be generous. If you're open-handed and you're giving, you know, even if you've given away something very dear, you feel better because you're lighter, because you're not hanging on to anything. As far as teaching is concerned, especially in a spiritual way, this is one that understands the truth that you never have the light unless you're giving it. If you try to hold it to yourself, it goes out. But when you start giving it, everything lights up. That's very much a Sagittarius principle. And there is, even though it is now much abused, there really is such a thing as sportsmanship. And that sportsmanship is appreciated by Sagittarius. And having those kinds of attitudes, this leads to popularity, which can sometimes be the downfall. Because you can be so wrapped up in having a good time with people that you don't realize that you're eroding away the better part of your character in happy indulgences. There's also a philosophy, and each of these philosophies has a truth in its own way. One of the truths of Sagittarius is the bigger is the better. And if you are a Sagittarian, such as Plato, Plato was an Aquarius with Sagittarius rising. And that's what his main name means, is broad shoulders. And Sagittarius rising often has those very broad shoulders. His real name is Aristocles, but that's something else. But if you're making a geometric construction, your geometric construction is going to be much more accurate if it's drawn on a larger scale. I remember when I first took geometry, we were supposed to draw parallel lines, and I drew mine really tiny. My demonstration and the parallel lines met before they got off the sheet of paper, but because in theory the construction was correct, I got it all right. But there are things, even in the physical world, there is a transcendence that comes from size. If you take a pailful of objects that are solid objects of various diverse sizes and shake them, the big ones always come out on the top and the little ones are always on the bottom. There's a reason for that, but that really strikes the Sagittarius consciousness. The big ones always come out on top. And so again, it's a sense of proportion, which can be taken right or taken wrong. I'm sure all of us went through Sunday school, maybe not Chargy, but we all went through Sunday school where we were supposed to draw a heart on the board, and then the teacher would say, how much of your heart are you going to give to play? And then you'd, you know, take a sector and give it to play. And how much are you going to give to candy or something like that? And when you had all of the heart used up, the teacher would say, well, how much of your heart are you going to give to God? And then you had nothing left. And the teacher admonished you, saying, well, we'll give you another chance, but we'll give you, this time you draw a bigger heart. And it was by proportion, it was the same thing all over again. But that whole idea. Now, some of these things work. Big-hearted people do really well. And just as a sideline, Jupiter in Leo does sometimes indicate enlarged hearts. More often than any other pattern. But, you know, is bigger always better? If it's a mutual insurance company, the bigger the number of people you have in it, the better it is, that so that if there's a tragedy for somebody, nobody gets hurt very bad. However, if you're making soup, if you make a bigger soup by pouring in a lot more water, it's not better. And then both of these things can happen with Sagittarius. There's a thinning kind of quality that comes with Sagittarius. And this is a philosophy very often of generalization. And generalization is not the same thing as abstraction, even though in many ways it is similar. It gets to be something slipshod. The humor of the United States is Jupiterian, the humor of England is Capricornian. Yes, we do things by overstatement, and the British do things by understatement. You know, we make these great, big, hilarious kinds of statements, and that's Sagittarius. But there are some, you can't tell this to Saturnian people, and you can't tell this even to a lot of Mercurial people, but there is really something to the Sagittarius way of things. If you think you have lost something, and you think you are lost, that puts you in a mindset, we are lost. But if you think found, and if you think you expect that at any moment it's going to turn up, you're much more likely to find something than if you think it's lost. As a nature force, inflation, levity, buoyancy, all of those are Sagittarian qualities. Anything expansive or broadening or proliferating is a wonderful Sagittarius idea. Size and displacement. Things float if they're bigger relative to their specific gravity. But there are also bigger gaps. Together with Aquarius, the whole concept of intervals, volumes, and open spaces are Sagittarius. The whole idea of snowballing, where something increases more and more rapidly, that is very much a Sagittarian quality. Some people believe the laughing Buddhas, the Dawn Horse Buddhas, believe that you can laugh yourself into heaven. And I believe it. I really do. Because sometimes when you relax about something, you can see how silly, small your way of looking at things was, and you start to laugh. And when you laugh, you relax even more. And if eventually the whole thing goes and goes and goes, and some people claim that they have laughed themselves into a transcendent experience from that kind of activity. Anatomy or physiological principles, all the fatty tissue, the storage tissue, the protective tissue, the ease tissue, the momentum tissue is ruled by Sagittarius. The whole idea of metabolism, which we talked about earlier, the hips as a cushion, as a way to ease through life, are ruled by Sagittarius. The thighs for elevation, for extension, for projection, all of those things. Sagittarius also rules the sciatic nerve, and especially when Sagittarian pride is taken in how much work one can do, one is likely to sciatic nerve problems. Now we can talk about something we've been doing all along. We look at potential positives and potential negatives. But we always look at the potential positives first. And there's a reason for that, because psychological studies have found if you tell somebody the negative side first, they'll never recover to appreciate the positive side. So therefore, if you have to break news, like in a good news, bad news joke, you always break the good news first, because otherwise people will never come back. Sagittarians see good as its own reward. It's wonderful to experience benevolence. It's wonderful to experience godliness. Sagittarius also believes anything is good that is mind-opening. But by thinking its opposite, it can also be one of the most orthodox, closed-minded people. Good for its own sake. The Sagittarius, more than any other sign of the zodiac, believe that there is any true and eternal good. Sometimes for Sagittarius, good is pleasure. Ernest Hemingway's definition of good was, good is what I feel, something is good when I feel pleasure after having done it. Good as anything that broadens and unifies people. Motive, sometimes Sagittarius's motive is to make people laugh and to be happy. Sometimes the motive is sport or challenge. Sometimes the motive is to be the good guy. Philanthropy is a Sagittarius quality, and that doesn't mean just giving money. Taking the easy way for right or wrong is a positive for Sagittarius. Potential negatives: association with ideas, ideals, principles, and religion. And that association then results in hubris or bias or pomposity. Strangely enough, misanthropy is a Sagittarius quality. If you study Timon of Athens by Shakespeare, you'll see he becomes a misanthrope. And he becomes a misanthrope because he's so shallow. He's an optimist about humans, but then when it doesn't come through, then he's completely deflated and he becomes misanthropic. Potential negative for Sagittarius: after a while, some people won't believe you because you exaggerate so much, because you distend the truth so much. Behavior-wise, it's a pushy sign, it's a braggadocious sign, and it's bombastic. It's also a sign that is dissipant, and it's a sign of excess, of greed, of puffiness, everything too much. And there are some people that can find a way into it. They can get into the aloof abstraction and identify with it, but not in a pompous orthodox way, but in an ivory tower kind of way, or even a holier-than-thou kind of way. And sometimes it can lead others to destruction by being unaware of their limits, because it doesn't see any limits. Bipolarity, it's a positive sign. But its positivity is not in energeticness, it is in its optimism. And it's one of the, if not the, most extroverted sign. It always sees things as easy. By attribute, it's a common sign. That means it can change things from one state to another, one kind of positivity to another. It's not always really reliable in following through. You don't always want to make appointments with Sagittarius consciousness that's quite strong. And we've mentioned before, if I have the idea, what do I need the experience for? It's a fiery sign. But it's fire more as light. And yet, even in that, not as visible light, but as spiritual light. It's the fire of inspiration. It's not a flame like Sagittarius, or it isn't a glowing heat like Leo. It's an inspirational fire. It comes out with a light of intelligence. The ruler is Sagittarius, who is the teacher, edifier, the priest. Mercury has its detriment there. Jupiter's the ruler. What did I say? Oh, yeah, Jupiter, yeah. Mercury has its detriment there because it wants something very definite and it can't hold the whole idea in a concrete mind. Pluto has its fall because it wants to compact things into a black hole and not have things spread out and universalize. No planet is exalted in Sagittarius. people who have the sun in Sagittarius, the eternal goodness, John Greenleaf Whittier, somebody who is looked at the good in philosophy and saw the whole universe as good, Spinoza. Somebody who was nicey-nice, Louisa May Alcott. Somebody who was broadly appreciative and understood religion and the positive things, even in the orthodoxy, Willa Cather. Here's somebody that was fiercely spirited, Winston Churchill. Here's somebody that was shallow, but fortunately had some other things, who had a little bit of art, Frank Sinatra. Tycho de Brahe, the inspired astronomer. And then here's one that's really raucous, Bette Midler. Did you ever see that the joke, the famous Bette Midler joke? She says, "I was out one night and I got so wild," and she said, "the next morning I woke up in bed with an elephant. And so I turned to the elephant and said to him, was I tight last night?" The elephant goes, "All right, Toulouse-Lautrec." Yeah, another one to be edited out before YOU takes it. Storyteller, adventurous, Joseph Conrad. Here's one that was really pompous and proud. "I am France," Charles de Gaulle. Here's very happy Emmett Kelly, the famous Ringling Brothers clown. Here's one that was both religious and fiery sign, cruel, Mary Queen of Scots, Bloody Mary. Here's one that was kind of wild and indulgent, almost to the max, Jimi Hendrix. Here's one that was very Pollyanna, Walt Disney. Here's one that worked everything by abstract principle, Margaret Chase Smith. Here's one that's so abstract, he's terribly hard to read, André Gide. One for humor, James Thurber. For pomp and circumstance and brassiness, Aitor Berlioz. Happy, Brownie McGee. Big show, Mary Martin. Here's a happy one that used to read the comics to the kids, Fiorella LaGuardia. Here's one that was, all of her poetry is light, lilting and light and happy, Emily Dickinson. Someone quite spirited, Jane Austen. Probably the king of philanthropists until Bill Gates, Andrew Carnegie. Here's one that was dissipated, Adam Clayton Powell. Did any of you remember Adam Clayton Powell? He was a congressman from Harlem. He would, instead of going back to Harlem to visit his constituents, he would go to Bimini or someplace like that. And his constituents loved him. They figured, well, if I were in the same place, I'd do the same thing. And he had a taste for scotch. And they told him, "You've got an ulcer. You can't drink scotch anymore." So he drank scotch and milk. dissipation, if ever there was. Here's one that was cruel and very overconfident. George Armstrong Custer. Here's one that is quite exaggerative, Woody Allen. Here's one that is very proud and very spirited, Ludwig von Beethoven. Playful, Harpo Marx, and now my heart starts to beat heavily. Very open-minded, she's changed her life so many times and I've loved her every way. Jane Fonda is a Sagittarius. Here's somebody that did everything on a huge epic scale, but he had religious bias. Wrote some great poetry, John Milton. Here's somebody that was very celebrant, Jimmy Smith, the organist, just died recently. Here's somebody that was very happy, he also just died recently, Dick Van Dyke. Somebody very positive in philosophy, Santana. Somebody light in abstraction, Paul Klee. Now, we said that each of the common signs has its cowboy hero. And this is a perfect Sagittarius cowboy hero. Wild Bill Hickok, the fastest gun in the West, was Gemini. Jesse James was a Virgo. But Billy the Kid was a Sagittarian. Abstract Ada Byron. Grand Maria Callas. Jovial Mark Twain. Using analogies, Jonathan Swift. Really orthodox, who also used analogies, John Bunyan. Adventurous, Margaret Mead. This is one that wanted all of his children to be born with frock coats. Samuel Butler. William Buckley. Pollyanna. In abstract, Sagittarius rules moralists, judges, educators, explosions, archery, amateurs, gamblers. How long? Okay. Promoters, generalists, bombs, ceremonies and rites, theologians, balloonists, together with Gemini con artists. Rapid expansions, clergy, long distances, travelers, speculators, inflation, universality, philosophy, publishers, churches, philanthropy, grad school, scholars, together with Pisces, clowns, sportsmen, good time periods. In the ascendant, it usually makes for taller people and people who walk with big steps usually. And there's a lot of bone taper. All the fiery signs have limb and bone taper. Sometimes you find horsey-jawed, very often large people. Sometimes they walk with lopes. Body has a general taper, especially from extremely wide shoulders. Sometimes the body is bulky. Sometimes it's the domed forehead, especially in ministers, you see that. And in expressions, when Sagittarius is rising, they do the nose flare thing, just like a horse, you know what I mean, where the nostrils open up. Some Sagittarius rising do elephant trudges. And some actually whinny like horses when it's rising. And some snort like horses when it's rising. And very often Sagittarius rising has big teeth and wide spaced teeth. Usually big smiles, sometimes horsey headed, often big boned. And when they laugh, it's a jovial laugh. The ninth house, opportunities for education, upliftment, and improvement. That means opportunities for higher education of all kinds. Grad school, professional school, divinity school. This also represents, in that same uplifting way, the kind of opportunity that one has to grow religiously or philosophically. For example, Saturn in the ninth house will indicate somebody who has a very conservative background in religion, whereas somebody Uranus, I had a friend that had Uranus in the ninth house. It was both parents were Freudians and psychiatrists. The ninth house in this regard also represents aspirations. General higher purposes and opportunities to seek for a higher purpose. For me, I have Taurus on the cusp, and for me, the higher purpose is always love. Value systems. Another grouping of things for the ninth house, anything that is widely opening and broadening. That can be travel. Or something that brings about abstraction, or or universal. Also, faith. Opportunities for faith that go into something that's going to open you up in a bigger way than you've ever been before. Publications to get wider spread proliferation of your work. The ninth house also represents opportunities to find and express positivity. Most especially opportunities for gratitude, thanksgiving, or to be something like a big brother or big sister or something like that. The ninth house also represents opportunities to develop the higher mind. That is to form judgments. Look at all the facts, look at all the feelings, what everything that's involved, and to form a judgment. One of the highest things a human being can do. And that represents opportunities to ponder, to muse over things. The ninth house also represents opportunities for pure idealism. That is amateurism. Amateur comes from the word love, something that is done for the love of it. And an amateur always puts more love in where the pro has to cut corners. People who are that we call buffs. In mundane and horary astrology, the ninth house represent rules opportunities for higher education, the Supreme Court, all courts for that matter, public instruction, distant relations, in-laws, outlaws, but distant ones, judges, your partner's relatives, travel trends, clergy, grandchildren, passports, bulls or edicts, religious trends, air travel, and canon law. Any questions? Thank you very much. Overwhelming. Couldn't help but like the person, even have the steam rolled over you.